is the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. Here is your host, Brian McClanahan.
Welcome back to the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. This is your host, Brian McClanahan, and this is episode 202, covering the week of January 20th through January 24th, 2020. Glad to have you back on the program. Very glad to be here. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Abbeville Institute, like our Facebook page at Abbeville Institute, and of course, subscribe to our YouTube page at Abbeville Institute. You can find all those social media accounts at our webpage, abbevilleinstitute.org. While you're there, give us an email address and we'll give you a free ebook. Also, while you're at abbevilleinstitute.org, click on that support tab. You'll have donor options. You can donate monthly, annually, or a one-time gift. And of course, everything we do is supported by your generous contributions. And those contributions are tax deductible to the full extent of the law. So consider a nice gift to the Institute. Help keep the podcast going, the website going, all of our conferences, all those things that we do that you like are supported by your contributions. You can also click on that support tab and you'll see a shop button. Click on that. It'll take you out and you can get your Abbeville Institute apparel so you can advertise the Institute with high quality embroidered material, hats, golf shirts, t-shirts, all kinds of great stuff. And again, that does support the Institute as well. You can also advertise. If you like this podcast, share it around on social media. Like it on your favorite podcast websites. Give it a review. All of that will help expand the message and get more eyeballs and ears onto the Institute and its podcast. All right. Well, let's talk about the material for the week. And of course, because of the week that we had, because of the nature of the week, it is Lee Jackson week. You've had Lee Jackson events all over the South in various SCV camps and other places where people still are allowed to talk about Lee and Jackson in a nice way. We dedicated an entire week to Lee Jackson, the war, and Reconstruction. Now, this is getting harder and harder to do in 21st century America. Here we are, 2020. Who would have thought 20 years ago that we will be sitting here today and we're discussing Virginia of all places, removing Robert E. Lee from the United States Capitol building. The statue that was gifted in 1909 is now under discussion for being removed from the Capitol. Now, you could say, well, the social justice warriors were there in 2000. Of course they were. I mean, we saw what happened at South Carolina in 2000, 20 years ago. We know that this started really in the 1990s and the way that it is today, but the speed at which it's occurred, and I think a lot of this has been fueled by social media, has been fueled by the internet on the left and gathering forces to go and do these type of things, which would be tearing down Confederate monuments, trying to get rid of anything Confederate in America. I think that that is part and parcel and because of things like social media. Now, this is not to say that Lee himself, or Jackson, for example, was universally popular in 1865. They weren't. There were many people in the North that thought Lee and Jackson were traitors. There were many people in the North, if not the majority at the time, who believed that those men should be punished. Maybe, at one point, there were many people in the North who did not think that any of these men should be celebrated. But that is not what won, you see. What is really under attack in America today, and I've mentioned this before, is the entire idea of reconciliation. That there are unique people in America, that the South is unique, that Southerners were a valuable part and had valuable contributions to American history and society, that the South was an important part of America, that conservative Southerners were a valuable part of America. What you're really seeing today is the fact that that particular view is now under assault, that that particular view is no longer accepted in mainstream America. And so those are the people, those are the only people really in America that can be vilified. Now, of course, as we've talked about ad nauseum on this particular podcast, in episode after episode after episode, this is just the beginning in a long culture war. And Pat Buchanan actually wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago about, you know, the culture war comes of the Old Dominion. And I wrote a piece right after the Democrats won control of the state legislature in Virginia that bills taking down Confederate monuments were going to appear very quickly, and they have. In fact, as Ben Jones points out in the piece we published on Monday, he said, look, I mean, there's now a discussion to take Lee out of the Capitol building and replace him with Nat Turner. That was first on the list. You think about what this says about American society. The people who want to take Robert E. Lee out of the Capitol, in many ways, to many Americans, North and South, and as Ben Jones lists, I mean, he lists Teddy Roosevelt, Dwight Eisenhower, all kinds of people, not Southerners, but Northerners, who called Lee one of the greatest Americans ever. Franklin Roosevelt. These are people who the left universally admires. Now, maybe not Eisenhower, but certainly Franklin Roosevelt. Booker T. Washington had nice things to say about Robert E. Lee, or at least Southern leaders, men of Lee's character. A man whose very spirit was reconciliation after the war. Want to replace him with a person, a man, who slaughtered people in their sleep. Men, women, and children. Think about what that says. Lee went to war against the United States, fighting for a sovereign federation of states, the Confederate States of America. It doesn't matter that anyone didn't recognize, oh, well, Europe, no state recognizes the Confederacy. So what? So what? I mean, legitimacy doesn't come from what everybody else says. It comes from what the people themselves of that particular area say, and the people of the southern states said they're no longer part of the United States. They declared their independence, essentially, through secession, and they said, we're now an independent federal republic. The states are independent. We're no longer part of the United States. So Lee, siding with his state, which this idea of state citizenship over federal citizenship was something that was an open-ended question in the 1860s. He sides with Virginia and then defends Virginia. Right? So, but he was waging war against an army, a military, soldiers, not women and children. No, not that. He was waging war against a regular army. Contrast that to the guy they want to put in the Capitol who was slaughtering civilians. That's really a good thing we want to show in our Capitol building. But you see, this is all part of a grand policy, a grand strategy from the left, dating back to about the 1830s in America, which has sometimes been militant, sometimes been well-organized, sometimes, and of course, always been very vocal in trying to revolutionize the United States. 2020 is no different. We're 200 years beyond the 1830s. When you started seeing the burnt-over district of the North become very active in social reform. And what they did is embrace Jefferson's all men are created equal line, and they created a proposition nation. And conservatives, quote-unquote conservatives today, in the piece I wrote on Tuesday to Lee's, have embraced this very thing. This is why I called them social justice conservatives. And on some issues, sure, they might be in line with, say, decentralization or maybe a more limited government in some ways, certainly. So they call themselves conservative. But what they really are is embracing the revolutionaries of the 19th century and calling that conservative. There's nothing conservative about it. As many Southerners pointed out, Dabney among them. Look, if you do this, you're opening a Pandora's box. All the things that you rail against in society can be traced directly back to these Northerners, these Yankees. Not all of them. I mean, there were reformers in the South too, certainly, who were interested in this type of activity. And it wasn't just about slavery, but there were other major issues as well. When you look at all of these ideas of under the banner of equality with a capital E, right? And this is the problem with it. Because it's not just equality under the law. It's not just saying, look, every individual is equal under the law. No, that doesn't work any longer. You have to have something beyond that. And so all this is traced back to the war and Reconstruction. There's little doubt about this. I mean, it's a clear line. So when you take someone like Bone Kemper, who's written a number of books about Lee and Grant, you know, Lee lost the war, Grant is better than Lee, the Lost Cause myth in American history, all of this stuff. I mean, this is a conservative. He writes for Regnery, a conservative publisher, Regnery History. Regnery also publishes other books that are counter to this. I mean, it's not Regnery. They're appealing to certain groups within conservatism. It's not Regnery's fault. But the fact is, Bone Kemper hasn't found a Southern position he doesn't like, or a Southerner he can't criticize. And you take this with people like Forrest Neighbors, who I've talked about on this podcast, or Alan Gelzo. I mean, these are people that have determined that the South is the evil in American society and it must be eradicated. Bone Kemper, of course, is of Germanic descent. The Germans during the war, as Richard Taylor pointed out, always wanted to lecture Southerners on how they weren't really American. I mean, this is just stupid, right? But this is what these people are at the end of the day. And there's no other way to describe them. Stupid. That somehow that revolutionary zeal coming out of the 48 revolutions, and Clyde Wilson talks about this, of course, in his review of Gangs of New York on Thursday. All this stuff fits together. This revolutionary zeal to remake America. And of course, now we're seeing this openly admitted from the left. I mean, Barack Obama said it in 2009. We're going to continue the process of remaking America. That was his first inaugural address. He said it. You've got members of the quote-unquote squad who stand up and say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to remake America. Going to remake America. And even conservatives have adopted this Make America Great Again. That phrase, make, right? Which is progressive in many ways. I mean, look, Donald Trump is a progressive. He's a 1940s Democrat in many ways. And with some modification, of course. But he's a progressive. The progressives have taken over both parties. And they all believe in that proposition nation. And part of that is because conservatives, quote-unquote conservatives, what I call social justice conservatives, have made that their agenda, that part, that Lincoln, of course, as Gary Wills pointed out, revolutionized the revolution. This is what Jefferson meant about that. I mean, that wasn't part of this. He revolutionized the revolution. Bradford pointed this out. Mel Bradford pointed this out. And, of course, he was excoriated for that. And then Reagan withdrew his nomination for the NEH because he had unkind things to say about Abraham Lincoln, which there's lots of unkind things to say about Abraham Lincoln. But here we are in 2020, and now this crusade, this social justice crusade, is being supported by the Girondists like Bone Kemper or Gelzo, or the other fools in the Republican Party that think somehow they're going to get brownie points from the left and they won't be guillotined because they sort of support their mission. I mean, look, Gelzo would be in line with taking down Confederate statues just like anyone else because these people were traitors. They deserved a traitor's death. They don't deserve to be admired or honored. Bone Kemper would say the exact same thing. Lee is a problem. The quote-unquote lost cause myth is a problem. What myth is really there? I mean, except for the myth of Abraham Lincoln. I mean, that's the real myth. The funny thing about the Bone Kemper book is that he cites people like J.F.C. Fuller, a real fascist, in supporting his position. So, who were the anti-fascists then? If Fuller didn't like Lee, and of course, Hitler himself had nice things to say about the Union side of the war. In fact, he supports the very premise that Abraham Lincoln supported in the war. If these are the fascists and they're saying these things about the South, then who are the real anti-fascists? I mean, who are the people we really should be looking at and saying, well, wait a second here. If Hitler liked this side, maybe we should think there's something to the other side. If J.F.C. Fuller, a real fascist, said that this side was right, maybe we should be thinking about the other side. That might be logical, but no, because now somehow Southerners like Lee are just these fascists, which is so laughable and so stupid, it's not even funny. I mean, you can laugh at it, but it's more like a laugh of just sadness. You're laughing because it's so sad, you don't know what else to do. And then, of course, Jackson, Stonewall Jackson, is also an individual who is meeting condemnation of the left and the social justice conservatives. Why? Well, because Jackson was a Confederate. Now, of course, Jackson himself, E.L. Godkin, who Russell Kirk actually wrote about in his Conservative Mind, E.L. Godkin, and I wrote a little piece about him too in Forgotten Conservatives in American History with Clyde Wilson. Godkin thought Jackson should be universally admired, North and South. This is a man of tremendous character and integrity, a man that Godkin said only America could produce. He wanted the North to also claim Jackson. He wanted Jackson to be a Northern hero, not just a Southern hero. And of course, this is the way that Lee was also viewed after the war by anyone with half a brain. Lee was produced by America. He was a uniquely American individual. And this is why even in the 1940s, you could find calendars, wall calendars from Northern companies that had Lee's birthday listed on it. Jackson's birthday listed. These two in particular were considered to be two of the greatest Americans who ever lived. But not today. The Twitter historians won't have anything of it. Of course, I've taken down their stupidity in a piece at Abbeville Institute. They won't have anything of it. Because Lee was a traitor, or Lee was a racist, or Lee was a slave owner at one time. I mean, all that stuff, this is what you get, and it's the Atlantic and other places. So, here we are, 2020, and it's now heresy to say that Robert E. Lee is a great American, or Stonewall Jackson's a great American. And of course, as Neil Kumar points out in his piece on Jackson, there is much to admire about Stonewall Jackson. If you want to find an individual, and Lee as well, but I mean, we'll just focus on Jackson for a second. If you want to find an individual who really personified what it meant to be an American, but more importantly, a Southern gentleman, it was Thomas J. Jackson. Not a great teacher, students hated him, but a great man. A great leader of men, a man who was devoutly Christian, a man who was devoutly honorable in every single way. There's nothing dishonorable about Stonewall Jackson, except to the left, well, he fought for the South. That means he was a slavocrat, right? So, I mean, this is, it's, again, it's so stupid. But would you say that, of course, these social justice conservatives, they wouldn't say the same thing about Washington. No. You can't say that about Washington. Of course, the left will say the same thing about Washington. Well, yeah, Washington was a slavocrat, too. He fought for slavery. The 1619 Project has made this very clear. And, of course, it's funny to see the right, the social justice conservatives, twist themselves into knots trying to figure out how to get out of that. Oh, no. You can't say that. I mean, Washington, he was against slavery. He was, well, so was Jackson. Lee never said anything kind about the institution itself. He was a 19th century, man of the 19th century. He didn't believe that either race were equal with each other. He thought that there would be racial tension at times, but he was not a pro-slavery ideologue. You can't confuse him for that. He wasn't Dew or some of the other pro-slavery ideologues, James Henry Hammond. He wasn't any of these individuals. But what we have, of course, is this, the left saying things, well, I mean, these people are, you know, they did believe in slavery. And so, I mean, Washington, Jefferson, Madison, all these people. So we can't admire them either. We should take down their statues too. And of course, the social justice concern, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. You can take down Lee. You can take down Jackson. You can take down all the Confederate stuff. Get rid of all the Confederate flags, Confederate monuments, Confederate symbols, whatever it is, Confederate names. I mean, anything Confederate has to go, but you can't touch the founders. Now, did the founding generation fight for slavery? I mean, the British certainly said they did. Is that true? Well, we can say no. I mean, Certainly there were Americans who were concerned about what the British would do in slave insurrections. I mean, this is very openly said in the stated in the Declaration of Independence. There was a fear that the British would incite slave insurrections, so that was a problem. Anyone with half a brain, again, would see that as a problem. That's violence. It's Nat Turner. It's slaughtering civilians. But of course, I guess nowadays, these people, because they don't have half a brain, want to elevate that to a position of honor in our U.S. Capitol building. What does that say about reconciliation when you think about that? I mean, the man that slaughtered people, this is what we think of anyone on the right. They should be slaughtered. And they openly say it on social media at times. Or anyone that doesn't agree with our views. So, again, it's just part and parcel for the 21st century. Clyde Wilson's piece is rather interesting. And I'm going to talk about the last piece on Friday, which is a piece on Reconstruction. Clyde Wilson's piece is interesting in his review of Gangs of New York. He calls the film tolerable. I like the film. There are some parts of it that are just kind of silly, but he does call the film tolerable, and he thinks that you should watch it. Now, the reason you should watch this film, and I agree with him, is because of the takedown of the North. It's the way that Scorsese portrays the North, the nativism of the North, the Wide Awakes, and some of the other people that were violent. I mean, these people were violent individuals. The way that, I mean, there's a beautiful scene in that movie where they show the Irish getting off the boat and they're signing right up to go sign up for to go into the military because it gave them three meals and a few hundred bucks. And these people were sent out as essentially cannon fodder. You didn't have to have rich New Yorkers going in. I mean, you get into all this stuff and avoid the draft. You got the draft riots where one of the main characters in the film, a black character, is lynched because of it. So you have all that complexity of the North, and I love that about the film. You've got, and the image we use is of the Daniel Day-Lewis character, the butcher, wrapped in the U.S. flag. These are the people that were Republicans at the time. These are the people that men like Gelzo and Bonekemper would support. They would support all these individuals because they're on the right side. Support the lynchers. Support the Wide Awakes. Support the nativist thugs in New York against some of the other groups. And as Clyde points out, he says, you know, why should we disparage the Irish for not wanting to go fight in the war? Why? I mean, was this their fight? He says, that's really more of an honor of patriotism than anything else, saying, no, I'm not going to fight in that war. But of course, many Irish did. And again, they were used as cannon fodder most of the time. Send the Irish out. Whereas in the South, there were real Irish patriots. Cleburne, for one, or Claiborne, as you might say, but Mitchell. There were real Irish patriots in the South who were saying, you know, we're gonna support this independence. The Pope, actually, as Clyde points out in the piece, the Pope was warning Irishmen about going to the United States because they were being used as cannon fodder. Don't go there into the North. Don't do it. The Pope, of course, was more supportive of the Confederacy than the United States. So, you've got all of that working against this righteous cause myth. That's the real myth in all of these things. Not Lee, not Jackson, but the righteous cause. That's the real myth. It's the real myth of American society. But what we see on a daily basis, and if you follow anything on social media, is that no, it's the lost cause. That's the real myth. These people weren't great Americans. I've had people email me, you're just too invested in the lost cause myth. I'm not. I'm a realist. I understand there were problems with the Confederacy. Lee wasn't infallible. I mean, none of these people were. They're people, right? I mean, they're all fallen people, and they make mistakes. They don't do everything right, but they were great Americans. And that cause of independence, it really embodies the American principle, the spirit of self-determination. Doesn't matter if you say that, well, certain people couldn't vote. Well, certain people couldn't vote in the North either. I mean, that's a bad argument. So the people that could vote, the citizens of the time, determined that their cause was of self-determination. And that's the most important thing. So then you get to the view of Reconstruction, as Alphonse Louis Vinn points out in his piece on PBS's Reconstruction. Now, we talked about this, I believe, on this podcast. And this particular series, again, follows this social justice conservative, social justice warrior myth, in placing, and I'm going to have a piece, if you get Chronicles Magazine, I'll have a piece on Reconstruction and where these two things fit together in the February issue. But Reconstruction really is the key. It's not the war itself, but Reconstruction is the key because it's during Reconstruction that you see this transformation of how we're going to talk about the war, how we're going to talk about the period after the war. It's Reconstruction that really is important here. Again, it's because of reconciliation. We could either reconstruct or we can have reconciliation, and that was Lincoln's goal. I mean, if you want to say anything positive about Lincoln, look, at least Lincoln was interested in reconciliation. He was. He was interested in reconciliation, putting the Union back together with the absence of slavery the way it was before. Lincoln, as Phil Magnus has pointed out in a great book on colonization, supported colonization right at the end of the war because he didn't think that there would be any chance that black Americans could be integrated into Southern society. But nobody talks about this with Lincoln. No. But see, Lincoln was trying to figure out, and we can argue if that was true or not, but Lincoln was trying to figure out until his death how to put the Union back together the way it was, the status quo antebellum without slavery. He was trying to figure this out. And so when Lincoln is assassinated, what you get are the radicals, the social justice warriors of their day, now taking control of the process. And that creates all kinds of problems, North and South. But to people like Eric Foner, it's an unfinished revolution. He calls it now the Second Founding because of many. I mean, he's right about that. It was a Second Founding. And this PBS series on Reconstruction follows that line. And it places that particular narrative at the heart of everything. This is just, I mean, this is what Forrest Neighbors and Alan Gelzo and Bone Kemper and all these people believe. Even Dinesh D'Souza's, I mean, this is the narrative they followed. Dinesh D'Souza, the court historian now of the conservative or quote-unquote conservative Republican Party. I mean, this is what he is. This is the narrative they follow, that this is somehow conservative what they were doing. It wasn't. It was revolutionary. It's another form of a French Revolution. You see, the French Revolution unleashed this stuff. The United States was not revolutionary enough to the social justice warriors. And so because of that, it has to be, we have to have more of a revolution. More of a revolution. More revolution. The American War for Independence was not a revolution. It was a war for independence. And so now we have to revolutionize the revolution. Lincoln did it with the Gettysburg Address. And then everyone who believes in that as the basis of America just kind of followed suit. The South has long been opposed to that particular notion. The principles of independence. But the Southern tradition is conservative, naturally conservative, not radical reformist. So, this is an interesting question, interesting concept. How do we wrestle with these things of Reconstruction? I mean, look, conservatives for years thought Reconstruction was a tragic era. I mean, this is what they said about it. It's tragic. You have lawless government. You have corruption. You have all these things. Now, it's to be championed. It's to be embraced. This is a good thing. Reconstruction is grand. Taking down Lee and Jackson. We should have done that. Then all those Southerners should have been hung as traitors back then. They didn't do the right things. These Republicans leading, they're just good Republicans doing what they should have done. We should follow these Republicans. You see, they can't get out of their own way with R&D either. It's Republicans v. Democrats. Even 1865, it's Republicans v. Democrats, just like it's Republicans v. Democrats today. It's silly and stupid and laughable. This is why we need to talk about Jackson and Lee. This is why we need to point out the inaccuracies of Reconstruction. This is why we need to point out that the North was not this bastion of righteousness that everyone says it was. And if you're a conservative, you really shouldn't admire the work of Reconstruction and the radical transformation of America that took place in many different ways. It was a tragic time in American history, not a grand time. Now, that's not something that is going to get you any kind of major book contracts with university presses. But certainly this is something that for years was believed, only been changed recently as we've focused more and more narrowly on the race issue during Reconstruction and not the other parts of Reconstruction that really did America in, foreign policy, economics, all of those things that are dangerous for America moving forward. Until next time, good day.